Hallo en welkom bij een nieuwe aflevering van Cross Court Conversations. Today, the channel introduces a new segment called Throwback Tennis, a hopefully shorter show where we highlight specific matches, tournaments, players, or general history from the great sport of tennis. If you hadn't noticed by my extremely fluent Dutch introduction, our first episode of Throwback Tennis will be about the Netherlands, the country where Jason and I both live, as we take a deep dive into the history of tennis within the nation, its beginnings, its ups, and its downs. I'm sure that you have already noticed, especially those that have followed us for the past three episodes, that the deep, manly, husky voice that comes from my co-host Jason has been yet to be heard, and that is because he's still traveling throughout New Zealand. I imagine he's either at Hobbit Land, he's playing rugby, or he's protecting his home from sheep. If you are unaware, there are five sheep for every person in New Zealand. So if that is the case and you're currently in an all-out war against the sheep, Jason, just know that we're all here with you and supporting you in this tough battle. As I said, our first episode today will cover the history of Dutch tennis, as well as a look into the legendary Rotterdam Open, which kicks off on the 3rd of February. Hopefully you are listening to this closer to that date rather than the 9th, which is the end. And of course, we will have to wrap things up with a very important discussion, which is ranking the best Dutch snacks. Because what is tennis without some top-tier snacking? So go ahead, grab your mini frikandels or your cassoufflé or whatever it is that you like to eat while listening to our show, and let's dive right into it. Let's start talking about the history of tennis in the Netherlands. So before the game, we all love became a national pastime. It was actually the Dutch royal family and the royals during the 1400s that first brought the early form of tennis to the country. I'm not going to get into a whole full-on lecture on the Willems, although shout out to my Argentinian queen Maxima holding the fort down. But without their expensive hobbies and lavish lifestyles, tennis may not have gained the traction it has today. In the Netherlands, it all started in 1480, when the first tennis court was built on the property of the Lords of Voorn by Lady Margaret of York in Briel, South Holland. Back then, tennis wasn't exactly what we know today. It was a mix of tennis, padel, and squash in a sort of court that was walled up and covered. It had all sorts of wacky rules that even diehard sports fans will have trouble wrapping their minds around. I mean, I tried to watch some highlights and I had almost no idea what was going on. It's definitely tennis or some sort of tennis, but not what we watch at all today. And in fact, the sport has mostly died down. There's around 50 courts all around the world left over from that time. And the reason for is not only that lawn tennis became so popular, but it was because it was strictly for nobles and royals. It's not like we had real tennis courts all over the place. To give you a little insight into how sort of snobby it was, the word serve actually comes from this era because royals would have their servants toss the ball to the other side to start play. So next time you hear great serve, just know it originally meant good job, peasant. You threw the ball correctly to the other side. From the moment that court opened up at Lady Margaret's backyard, more and more courts began appearing in Dutch castles in places like Arnhem, Haarlem, and The Hague, turning tennis into a status symbol for the elite. While most of them have been destroyed, it did help the sport to evolve into lawn tennis, the version which we now know and love today and just know as tennis. Perhaps the switch was done none so more clearly than in 1899 when the Dutch Tennis Association, or the KNLTB, was founded in Amsterdam, officially putting the Netherlands on the tennis map. Today, the association boasts the second largest sports membership in the country, only behind the KNVB, which is the Football Association. It has even received a royal status after its 40th birthday and has continued to be a place for young tennis fans and potential tennis pros to hone their skills and games. Shout out to the Cream Crackers out here in Groningen. That is my tennis club. Big up the Cream Crackers. Of course, every sport in every country needs its stars in order for it to grow. And these are the players who have made a living playing tennis from the Netherlands and have gone on to achieve great heights in the sports. Of course, perhaps the greatest tennis player in Dutch tennis history, you could argue, is Richard Krajicek. He's still to this day the only Dutch singles Grand Slam champion across both male and female tours in the Open era. He won Wimbledon in 1996. You also have Tom Oker, who was seen as one of the best players in the 1970s and 60s, and he reached world number 3 and was amazing doubles player. You had Kea Bowman, who is the first ever Dutch Grand Slam champion. She won the French Open in 1927. And of course, one cannot talk about Dutch tennis without talking about doubles, because that is where the Netherlands has made its true impact on the sport. Paul Harhaus and Jaco Elting, one of the best doubles teams of the 90s. They won all four Grand Slams together as a pairing. Both reached world number 1 in the doubles ranking. And of course, you now have Wesley Koolhof, who recently retired, but also is a great doubles tennis player. That might be the past, but there is a present and a future of Dutch tennis. Last year, the Netherlands shocked the tennis world by making the Davis Cup final. They beat powerhouse Spain, including Nadal's final career match, where Boutich van de Zandschulp defeated him, and they defeated Germany. They then met Italy, which of course has a stacked team, and unfortunately they were unable to capture the country's first Davis Cup, but it was their maiden Davis Cup final, so you could say that is their biggest achievement as of yet as a nation. With players such as Talon Griekspoor and Boutich van de Zandschulp carrying the torch for current Dutch tennis, can we see one of these guys finally bring a big trophy home? Only time will tell, but if they are looking for a great stage, there's no better place than the Rotterdam Open, and that is where we are headed next. 30. The AMB AMRO Open, also known as the Rotterdam Open, is one of the biggest indoor hardcourt tournaments on the ATP calendar. Sure, you could say that Queen's Club might be the most prestigious ATP 500 event hosted in the UK on grass courts, but Rotterdam has an insane history of champions and proves it should belong in that conversation. The tournament was founded in 1972 and has been held every year except for 1973. During that time, there have been 41 different champions. 10 of them have been world number one at some point in their careers, and these include the likes of Bjorn Borg, Jimmy Connors, Roger Federer, and current world number one Jannik Sinner, who won last year's trophy. And that's without even getting into the other all-time greats who didn't reach world number one but won the Rotterdam Open, such as Guillermo Vilas, Arthur Ashe, and Gael Monfils. Speaking of Roger Federer and Arthur Ashe, they both hold the record for most Rotterdam titles with 3 each. For all the greatness this tournament has seen, all the great champions that have lifted the prestigious trophy, it has been 27 years since local fans have cheered for a Dutch champion. That man was Jan Simmerink, the last Dutchie to win it in 1998. Last year, Talon Griekspoor made a strong run to the semifinals before he ran into Jannik Sinner. Fun fact about that, we were not at that match, but we were at the final, Jason and I, for the 2024 Rotterdam Open, in which we did watch Jannik Sinner defeat Alex de Minaur. We were very much on the de Minaur camp because it was a sea of Italians, and we were the only one shouting, "Let's go de Minaur." It didn't work. He got slapped. But it was a great experience. It was, to this date, the only tennis match I have attended. Seems a bit hypocritical for me to make a tennis podcast about it, but tennis is not always the easiest sport to get out to. So it was a great experience, and this is why Rotterdam Open will always hold a special place in my heart. Rotterdam, however, isn't just about its champions. Sometimes it's about the crazy stories. Such a crazy story was what happened in the 1984 final. At the time, the final was to be contested between Jimmy Connors and Ivan Lendl, two of the greatest players to ever step foot on the court, and they had a heated rivalry throughout their careers. When they first started playing against each other, Jimmy Connors often had Lendl's number. However, at this point, the tide was beginning to switch in favor of the Czech superstar. He would prove this by racing to a 6-love first set win and immediately breaking Jimmy Connors to start the second set and be up 1-love, meaning he won 7 games in a row, absolutely toying with the former world number one. Right as it looked like Lendl was going to absolutely cruise to a victory, all 5,000 spectators and the players had to evacuate as there was a bomb threat made on the stadium. It turns out it was just a hoax, but Ivan Lendl refused to continue the match for fear of his safety. The prize money was locked away and Lendl said that it shouldn't be touched until the match was resumed. However, it never has been resumed and to this day there is no 1984 Rotterdam champion. Although this year won't be as explosive as 1984, there are still many reasons to get hyped for this year's edition, even as reigning defending champion Jannik Sinner pulled out prior to the start of the tournament. Carlos Alcaraz makes his debut in Rotterdam, which is huge for the tournament. Former champions Daniil Medvedev and Andrei Rublev are returning, and a myriad of top 20 players such as Alex de Minaur, Stefanos Tsitsipas, and Herbert Hercash will all be in the mix, and that is without mentioning the likes of Botesh van de Zandschulp, Talon Griekspoor, who will represent the nation in this grand stage. Botic does have to play Carlos Alcaraz in the first round. I guess by the time you're listening to this, that match will be over. Botic, of course, was the winner of our Upset of the Year award last year when he beat Alcaraz at the US Open. So who knows, you know, anything can happen. By the time you're listening to this, the action will be well underway. So let's see if this year's edition lives up to all the hype that I'm giving it. For our last thing, stay tuned. I will give you the definitive top 5 Dutch snacks. It is time for the real reason that you're probably listening to this, my top 5 Dutch snacks. Let's be clear on this. This is my opinion, but given the amount of Dutch snacks I've consumed throughout my time here, shout out to the Jumbo Borrel mix, I think I'm qualified, perhaps even overqualified on this topic because I've consumed countless amounts of snacks from countless different brands that I could probably tell you which ones are the best too. So let's start at number 5. I'm going with Kaasstengels. This is a cheese sticks. It's simple. It's like a cheese lumpia or spring roll or whatever you call it in your parts of the world. People like it with mustard. I'm more of a sweet chili guy on my Kaasstengels, but they are so elite. I actually had some the other day for dinner and it was great. I just got rid of my wisdom teeth, so I can't really eat crunchy stuff. And I put those puppies in the air fryer for like 15 minutes because I want them crispy. And they were awesome. Don't do 15 minutes. It was maybe like 7 or 8. 15, you're going to burn down your kitchen. At number 4, I've gone for a controversial pick. Perhaps the one that always gets left behind when you make these snack mixes. The Nasi Schijf. It's a fried disc, or, well, the big one is like a sort of a hamburger patty shaped, or you have the tiny ones, of Indonesian-style fried rice. It gets put into a disc, and then covered in batter, and then deep-fried. I don't know why people don't like this. It's amazing. Like, what is wrong with you? It's so, you like fried rice, you like deep-fried stuff. How do you not like deep-fried fried rice? I never understood that. Like, people always leave it at the end. Like, why would you leave that one? It's so good. In at number 3, I've gone for perhaps the GOAT. You know, maybe iconic, you know. Is it the GOAT? Maybe not, but it's definitely the most well-known. I've gone for the Bitterballen. I love Bitterballen. I specifically like them when I get them at restaurants because I feel like the ones that you put in the air fryer never are as good. And this is something that I eat with mustard because I've seen people put mayonnaise on them. I don't really know about that. For those of you that don't know what a bitterballen is, it's essentially like a meat roux or sort of a meat mashed potatoes that gets deep fried. There's a lot of deep frying going on here, which, fuck yeah. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. So the bitterballen, It's definitely the most iconic, and I love them, but there are two that are higher than this. At number two, I've gone for the Kipcorn. It's a crispy fried chicken stick. Come on. Again, deep fried. You can't go wrong with it. It's essentially like a much crispier chicken finger. But I don't know what it is about the batter on it that it just, I love the Kipcorn. It's so good. My go-to sauce is curry sauce for that, in case you're wondering. And then number one, I'm sticking home. I've lived all the time I've lived in the Netherlands, I've lived in Groningen. So number one, it had to be the eierbal. Now, I'm sure many of you probably don't know what this even is, but it's essentially a bitterball with, instead of a meat roux, it has sort of a curry paste kind of thing surrounding a hard-boiled egg that then gets deep fried. I know, you're probably already hating on it. You're probably already hating on like, ugh, a deep fried hard-boiled egg. Ugh, that's so bad for you. So gross. Shut up. Shut up. If you haven't had one, go and find one. Come to Groningen and get an eyeball. It's changed so many lives, especially at 3 a.m. and from a snack wall. That's when it tastes the best. And trust me, a true Groninger knows that the best eierbal is the one that doesn't even touch a cardboard plate from the wall. It's the one that's transferred directly from the fry cook's hands to yours. You have to time it perfectly that as you're paying and opening that small hatch, the guy is just putting in a new one and you touch his palms even a little bit. Like you get a little finger touch from him and you just transfer that ball into your mouth. It's piping hot. It's amazing. If you, I already know everybody's gonna come at me and say that that's disgusting, you're gross. You don't know what you're talking about, okay? You don't know what you're talking about. With that little rant, that wraps up the first edition of Throwback Tennis. I hope you enjoyed this little dive into Dutch tennis history, the Rotterdam Open, and of course, the definitive list of greatest Dutch snacks of all time. As a little final prediction, I'm going to say that Daniil Medvedev finally breaks his trophy drought and wins his second Rotterdam title. We'll find out on the 9th of February if I am right. Please don't forget to follow us on social media at CrossCourt Convos for all the latest episodes, predictions, and general nonsense we get up to. Thank you so much for listening. Tot de volgende keer.